are you wouldn't have done it anyway. But, and it's a big one, that carries all our lives with it. You might do something foolish. No point in us saying that you shouldn't have done it. Not afterward. It's too late then.
The only stupid thing is starting on this trip. We could have run for it, all of us.
The man who runs today is only too likely to run for all of his life. Die on your feet, rather than struggle to live on your knees, my boy.
Michael didn't answer Doc. He kicked his booted heels into the flanks of the burrow, pushing it on toward the north. It was a largely uneventful day. During the morning, there was a sudden rise in the temperature, and it rained heavily. Driving gray clouds raced in from the east, shredding themselves on the jagged peaks all around. The snow turned to slush, pouring off the paths, carrying red dirt with it. A small stream at their left became swollen into a frothing torrent, almost within minutes. Around noon, with fog pressing down into the valleys, it became colder once more. The rain turned to sleet, then to a brief flurry of fresh snow. The water and mud froze again, making the footing treacherous for the animals. Within the hour, they all reined in, responding to an ear-filling, thunderous roar from the far side of the valley, somewhere up ahead.
Avalanche. Changes in the weather often trigger them.
Look, there!
A huge cloud of powdery white snow was funneling into the air, like the turbulent remnants of a vast explosion.
Seen them move faster than a wag on full throttle.
Could we break for a small respite, do you think, my dear Ryan? If it's not too much trouble. I can't recall when I felt so jolted and jarred.
Ryan guessed that they'd covered around 30 miles since they left the Villa Vista. Not the fastest progress in the world, but not too bad, considering the weather and the state of the trails. It would bring them into Yuma during daylight tomorrow.
Sure, we'll take 15. Then we push on.
JB seemed unusually quiet. Ryan had ridden the length and breadth of Deathlands with him, and knew well enough that something was very wrong. Doc and Michael had walked over to watch the stream as it rolled down the valley, stretching their legs and trying to ease some of the stiffness from the joints. The skewbald nickered as it heard something moving in the undergrowth. Both Ryan and JB went for their blasters, relaxing as a stout beaver waddled unconcernedly across the trail, its tail plowing a furrow through the fresh snow. JB simply stared at the plump, glistening animal, watching it as it plopped into the water.
What is it? What's eating you?
That easy to tell?
Yeah, for me. Probably not for the others.
Christy?
She said last night she had a feeling of something troubling you.
I don't think I want to talk about it, Ryan.
Fair enough. I have to ask if it's going to affect what we're doing, where we're going. Something ahead in Yuma?
It might be.
Come on. This isn't some fucking game.
Dark night, Ryan. Think I don't know that? Of course I do. But...
But what, JB?
I don't know, Ryan. Something I'm not sure of. Something about Yuma. When I know, then you'll know it as well, all right?
I guess it'll have to be. Come on. Let's hit the trail again.
The snow flurries ceased in the middle of the afternoon. The wind dropped, and so did the temperature, bringing a biting dry cold. The sun was already out of sight beyond the western white tops, immersing the valleys in gloomy shadows, when Ryan decided that they'd best look for a campsite for the night. As far as he could make out from Coburn's map, they had ridden more than 50 miles in the day, and were now getting into the sort of region where Seidler just might have scouting parties out, watching the roads from the south. Although, if Nelson hadn't made any move toward revenge for his son's murder in all those months, Seidler probably figured the Baron was going to let it lie. There'd been a small avalanche from high up the stark slopes to their right. It had been enough to bring down some of the smaller pines, tumbling them one against the other, blocking the trail. They all dismounted, Michael obviously in pain from the chafing of the saddle. Ryan led the way, walking his horse around the fallen trees, aware of the brooding stillness of the forested evening. When from around the bend of the trail, not far ahead of them, the stillness was suddenly broken.
You double-damned and bloody dog! Take one step nearer to me, and I will slit my throat open from ear to ear!
Ryan dropped the bridle, drew the Sig Sauer, and started to run forward.
I will see your bastard child dead at my feet before I leave this church, madam. Mine oath upon a limpet's walking staff!
And I with it, base villain!
Ryan burst through the fringe of stunted spruce trees, snow dusting his head and shoulders, his blaster gripped in his right hand. The three people in the clearing all turned at his entrance, their mouths gaping, eyes wide with terror. A stout man, red-cheeked and wearing a long cloak in shocking vermilion and thigh-length boots in ragged black suede, held a huge cutlass, obviously made from plywood, and painted silver. He was threatening the kneeling woman with it. She was slightly built, with light blonde hair and a pale complexion. Her dress was mud-stained around the hem and was a deep, rich green, decorated at the throat with scalloped silver embroidery. Standing by a horse-drawn wag was a lean young man with a crooked back and a livid red scar on his face tugging down the left eye. He was holding a sheaf of tattered paper. The side of the wagon was covered in a weather-soiled tarpaulin, but Ryan didn't have time to try to read the faded words painted across it. He skidded to a halt, aware of JB, Michael, and Doc rushing through the trees behind him. The man with the sword held it before him in a dramatic and utterly futile gesture of defense.
We are but poor traveling folk, but I do swear that I will sell mine honor as dear as any prince in Christendom.
Put the wooden blade down.
What's going on? Heard the shouting.
Now there was a moment to decipher the lettering on the canvas side of the wagon. Monsignor Capistrano, Madame Mort, and supporting company. Classics old and new, in the finest dramatic fashion.
They are journeying thespians.
What? You mean they're actors?
The woman was now on her feet, brushing her dress with nervous bird-like gestures, a faltering smile pasted onto her white face.
Indeed, gentlemen! We are in the acting profession. You caught us in rehearsal for the suicide scene in Lucia of Lisbon, a famous old tragedy of incest and mistaken identity.
We're sorry to have startled you. We heard the threats and...
Came running to defend the honor of a soiled virgin. And that does you the very greatest of honor, sir. Upon my soul, it does.
You never met Doc Tanner here, did you?
No. I have not yet had the pleasure. But I must introduce us to you. I am that Monsignor Diego Capistrano, proprietor of this company. The lady is Madame Ellie Mort, diva and disuse extraordinaire, who has performed before some of the greatest barons in all the Deathlands.
Who's the third one?
That would be Knuckles. He is stage manager, prompter, horse wrangler, keeper of the finances, and player of small parts, various.
I'm Ryan Carter. This is J.B. Dix, Doc Tanner, and Michael Brother.
There was a general shaking of hands. Ellie Mort seemed to Ryan to linger a little over his grip, and he felt her index finger brush the inside of his palm. Close up, he saw that she was older than he'd at first guessed, her face layered in powder and makeup. He also noticed that she was trembling, though that could easily have come from the shock of his bursting out of the trees with his blaster in his hand. As soon as Knuckles had offered a cursory hand to the four newcomers, he retreated to his position by the wagon, where he studied the script of Lucia of Lisbon.
He's shy. Many actors suffer in a similar way. Can we offer you a share in our humble repast? There are some venison pies and a decent portion of yesterday's bread.
Day before yesterday.
And some ale from our last venue.
What is your destination?
A place called Yuma, a half day north of here. Do you know anything of it, sir?
Yes, a little.
Ryan rubbed his hands together, the germ of an idea beginning to take a faltering shape in his mind.
But first we'll bring our horses here and tether them. We've got some beef jerky that we can share with you, and some bread that was baked this morning.
It was a pleasant and entertaining evening, with a small bright fire and sufficient food to layer the stomach. Ryan surmised that they were far enough from the enemy's ville to be safe from any random patrols. In any case, the surrounding forest was so thick that their campfire would be visible only from 100 paces or less. He had described himself and the others as simply traveling workers, hinting that they'd once been sentries, but that there'd been trouble in the past, giving the impression of hired gunmen without actually saying so. But his part of the conversation was mainly limited to listening. Monsignor Diego Capistrano not only kept up his end of the talk, he managed to keep up everyone else's as well. One moment he was the stammering baron of a vill in the glades, asking them to do a recitation of his own poetry.